Hi, everyone. Welcome back to my podcast series. Welcome to the Winner's Circle. On tonight's episode, I have a guest named Lloyd Ford, and I'll be chatting with him a little bit about his Black-owned businesses and his community service work for our people, for Black people. Just a little bit of background. We met on Instagram, just following each other. And I wanted to have him on the episode because of his community service and the focus he has for our people first, but also providing them with resources. And I feel like he does this in a couple of different ways. Like he has something called the Creative Group Economics Organization, something called Our Black Slate, and then Black Store, Inc. So good evening, Lloyd. Thank you for being here.
Hey, what's going on? I appreciate you having me.
Good. So do you want to talk a little bit about where you're from and your profession and why you decided to start those three programs?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm from Houston, Texas, born and raised. You know, got my degree from Prairie View A&M in management information systems, so computers. And, you know, that's what I thought I was going to do, you know, just be a regular, you know, 9-to-5 worker, you know, do my thing. It wasn't until, you know, other life experiences happened that kind of led me into the route that I'm in now. And, you know, it's mainly everything that I do is always going to be geared towards how we can help the Black community. And that's just my focus.
Right. And so when you decided to start these, you know, these three programs, like what were some of the challenges that you faced since you didn't start out as an entrepreneur, you started out in computers and working. So what were some of the challenges you faced, like in terms of like switching gears?
To be honest, you know, I started doing this while I was still working, just going to community meetings. You know, every day after I got off work, I would go to a community meeting. I would drive across town and whatever Black community that was having a meeting or whatever community, you know, some type of organization, I was going there and meeting and networking, you know what I'm saying, like every day. And it wasn't until, you know, I just started looking for other people that was already doing what we're doing. So I started going to NAACP meetings. And, you know, seeing what they were doing, because I was like, I didn't want to recreate the wheel. But to be honest, you know, it wasn't until, you know, I had built a website for NAACP Houston and Texas. I was helping out. I had more people part of my economic development committee than all the other committees combined. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the older dudes was like, why don't y'all run for leadership since y'all are doing things? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I thought about it. I was like, cool, you know, they haven't been taking ideas. Let's see how we can do more and be more involved. Right. And to be honest, the day, let's just say I put in my paperwork to run, me and my team put in our paperwork to run on that Thursday, the NAACP here in Houston had me served at my house the next day on Friday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was confused, you know, and they even tried to have the court case that Monday without me knowing it. But of course, the court wanted to call, so we got a chance to go, you know, prove ourselves innocent. So they tried to say I tried to steal the website, stuff like that. But just the levers of fighting our own people. And I'm still a member to this day. You know, we sued back. I had them serve not only here in Houston, but at their headquarters in Baltimore and asked them to show their books. And that was the end of that. Everything started kumbaya-ing after that when you asked them to show the books. But, yeah, I would say the biggest challenge is ever since I've been trying to help Black people, I've been fighting Black people. And I would say the challenges of not being discouraged, even though you're fighting against the people that you're trying to help. And I think that's the biggest thing. A lot of people get in this fight thinking it's going to be received like a hometown hero. And that's not always the case.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that a few different times too. Like there's always, unfortunately, pushback from your own people or some other things happening behind the scenes that kind of are trying to, you know, intentionally be put against you. So I saw on one of your posts that you recently visited the new Black Wall Street that's in Atlanta that opens up on Black Friday. Did you have a store location open up there as well? Or were you there just like for support?
No, I actually didn't get a chance to go. One of a lot of people here in Houston, now that they see the, you know, the black stuff and stuff that I'm trying to do, they right. actually just see me and then they tag us in it. But I would, okay. I didn't necessarily go, or I didn't even there, but they like, man, Lord, we can do this in Houston. So when everybody, whenever somebody sees something revolutionary, or they right. see a fist in it, or they see black in it, they automatically think that I started it here. And I'm here to tell everybody, look, it say black in it, I promise you, that don't mean I started it, but I'm glad that people are associating black pride with me. You know,
right. I'm That's never gonna good. Be good at that. That's like an automatic, instant kind of reaction thing. Okay. And so recently you did an event, I think it was on Sunday. And what event was that? And then how did it go?
I mean, to be honest, we have so many different events. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which one was this past Sunday. I'm trying to remember. But at the Black Store, you know, we have a lot of events. My community right. my community meeting is there every second Monday mm-hmm. of the month. We have community, we got community grant writing classes. We have so many different things going on. Poetry night, community movie night, yoga days on Wednesdays and Sundays. Because we have a community garden in the back of the store as well.
Nice.
So, you know, just different things like that. But pretty much a lot of the events are always well received. We even have a lady gun cleaning class where we bring like 5 trainers. And even mm-hmm. if you don't have a gun, we got a gun for you to learn how to clean.
Wow, so nice.
It's just different things. Just trying to stay relevant. And I always said if I was to have a business in the hood or a black business, that I would do everything I can to bring people to it.
Right.
I think enough of us don't do that. Right. We already paid for the space. Let's share it.
Right. Trying to cover all bases with the resources and classes that you have. I think that's good. I haven't heard, I'm sure they have them, but I haven't seen too much or heard too much of black organizations holding like gun safety classes or how to use, guns and things like that. And I think that's also important too. When we talk about like gun ownership and all those different things. I know that was a heavy conversation in our community. I want to say not last summer, but I feel like the summer prior.
Sure.
So I think that's great that you have that there as well. So now speaking of, about your other businesses that you have and like, you know, obviously they have to have a home. They have to have like, they have to happen at like a physical location. So when it comes to the real estate piece of it, from what I gathered, you have a property and like you have a store in it. How was that experience going, like going to get the property and then like having the space and, you know, trying to rent it out or like trying to hold a business in there? Like, how was that experience?
To be honest, you know, I think that was a challenging part also. Mm-hmm. One thing you'll realize is we don't own a lot of the real estate, even in the hood.
Right.
And to be honest, the location that we're at is the best location that we ever could have chosen, mm-hmm. but it definitely was not our first choice. Matter of fact, it was not even a choice at all.
Okay.
But whenever a landlord or something like that, and they seen the black store, none of them want the black store in their location. So that is the snag that we were running into. And only thing about it is I had a little bit more hands-on experience with it because I have my real estate license. So I was the one, you know, dealing with the people and the contracts, right. so on and so forth. So I got a chance to see, like, you know, why they not being so responsive when you have somebody on the line is ready to buy right now. But like I say, look at the universe, how it happens. You mm-hmm. know, none of those spaces would have allowed us to do what we do now at the Black Store, and that's right. bring the community to us. And if we would have tried to be in one of those other spaces, we just would have been a regular store, you know.
Right. And you probably would have had issues.
Oh, yeah. So many issues. Now we have so much free reign, you know, we pretty much do what we want to do.
Right. I was going to say, that's another important point too, is like when it comes to having like a black owned business, like running your own business or having your own property. I think a lot of people don't realize that like you may run into properties that the owners don't want to rent to Black people. And I think that's a wall that a lot of entrepreneurs maybe hit, but they don't really talk about it too much. But you kind of just reminded me of that. And I think that's an important point too.
Yeah, I feel like this. I think a lot of people, sometimes they may have it in their mind, but they don't really know if that's what it is. So I think it's not that they don't know or even want to talk about it, but I think a lot of them, you know, they it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. They're not sure, so they just kind of leave it alone. But I'm like, that don't help everybody else that's, you know, going through it.
Right.
But, you know, it takes, but at the same time, I had to let go of my own ego and realize that, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And sometimes, a lot of the times, we just don't have that information. And even in the neighborhoods and the buildings that's closest, most of the buildings that's closest are owned by Asian and Indian people. And what I've been trying to do is the Department of Neighborhoods in our town or in Houston is a Black lady. And what we could do is for these businesses and these people that are not trying to rent, lease, or anything and just letting these buildings stay stagnant, then you get taxed. You know what I'm saying? We don't allow you to just keep your businesses, you know, you have to be trying to do something with it. And if you're not, then we're going to tax you. Right. And that's how we stop the perpetuation is, you know, you got to hit people in the pocket. And we can't just let them have dilapidated buildings in our area.
Right.
That's not being addressed.
Right. So, and then they don't even want to give it to you for you to use.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't give it to me. They don't want us to have it. They don't want to give it up. You're like, hold on, you got to do something.
Yeah. And, you know. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about creative group economics and why did you think this was a need for the community? I was reading on the website that the mission with this initiative is to tackle poverty in our communities and start shaping the mindset of the youth through like mentorship and just kind of like providing like financial literacy with business and politics. Why did you feel like this was one of the, I guess, one of the three initiatives that you wanted to set up?
Actually, this was the first entity that we set up.
Okay.
Creative Group Economics was the first.
Okay.
Our Black Slate and PAID, which is PAID is just Political Advocates for Independent Democracy. So our Black Slate is just the theme of it, but the name of the PAC is going to be called PAID Texas. Political Advocates for Independent Democracy. Yeah. So, but we do that for a purpose, so you know, but at the same time, you don't want to be getting picked off of paper like, you know, this one Black. I'm a Black select.
I know, huh?
So, you know what I'm saying? You got to play that game at the same time, too. So, we're not dummies. But that's kind of what it comes down to. When it came to Creative Group Economics, that's what we started when we were working within the NAACP. Mm-hmm. And we found out that we was, you know, 600 people giving $20 a month, that's $12,000. What could we do with that? And that was kind of the philosophy that we ran with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were doing like a membership thing and had people going and we were raising money to do, you know, we opened vending machines and all type of stuff. But one thing that I realized, you know, anything that takes a whole bunch of people, especially if they don't understand the mission, can always be kind of slowly problematic. So, but that's why I lead with the economics, anything that we do, because you can't build a house from the roof down. So one thing we realized about that is look at Malcolm X, looking at Martin Luther King, neither one of them was entrepreneurs. So when they became demonized of their message and what they start realizing was the truth, then guess what? Malcolm didn't have those houses and those in the property that was the Nation of Islam. Right. Martin Luther King, when they didn't like what he was doing, he didn't get those grants. He didn't get that money to keep doing what he was doing. So one thing we want to do and what we're trying to do is sustainability. And we never want to go in a direction that we can't sustain. So that's why the creative group, the economics is always first and present.
Nice. Okay, awesome. And then that happens. Those courses happen most Monday evenings, right?
Those meetings are every second Monday.
Okay.
From 7 to 8. We start on time and we leave on time. We ain't like the church. We gonna get in, we gonna get out.
I know people got things to do on a Monday night.
Oh well, look, people come at like 8:05 and they be like, "Oh, y'all done?" Be like, "Yep." The rest be like the networking. So you know, I want people to see some of that.
I think that's good. I think it shows organization. I mean, we're known for being late anyway. That's just something within our community, and it's funny. But I think, too, like when we do operate in organization and on time, I think it sends a message for people in attendance, whatever the event is, and people who are just happen to be outsiders looking in that, like, okay, these people are serious about what they're into. They're organized about what they're into. You know, they take pride in it and they take care of it, you know? So I think, sometimes I think like that is a good habit for us to pick up as a people too, like trying to stay more organized in, things that we are into or things that we're working on.
I completely agree. Like enough, we don't take enough of that due diligence to make sure that, but that's one thing somebody can't say about me out here. Is, you know, one thing you're going to know is I'm consistent and you know what you're going to get with me. Like, you're going to get the same revolutionary-minded type person. And right. I feel like as long as you had a reputation, you know, of always understanding, like, if somebody was to say here in Houston, like, hey, you know, Lloyd did this to me, and if somebody that know me, they're going to be like, nah, we need to get him on the phone. That don't even sound like him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I feel like that's the type of representation. Reputation needs to precede us, you know, and communication. And we don't always have to agree, but as long as we're not doing that in detriment of the Black community, you know, right. Keep doing what you're doing. I'm not going to attack you because you're not doing what I feel needs to be done.
Right. Yeah. I think even if you don't agree with the person, but if you have unity to get to the same goal, I think that just shows a level of maturity and it'll eventually show progress too.
For sure. As long as you're not doing nothing to hurt the community, I don't have nothing to really say. I mean, I can disagree all I want.
Right.
But at the end of the day, as long as you're not selling drugs or doing anything like that, like even the Black Panther people out here, you know, so I'm sure they get tired of me. I'm like, look, I understand with the cop stuff, but, you know, there's some crack houses we need to go shut down. How about we go seal up the block on that?
Right.
But, you know, we cool with Pookie and Ray Ray. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I get it. But when I talk about, you know what I'm saying, teaching people guns and securing a block, I'm talking about securing a block where my business is. I'm not talking about going to City Hall. There's other ways for us to play that political game. And, you know, with guns, that ain't never going to, that's not the route that's going to win.
Right.
Not in that fashion, at least.
Right. All right. So let's sleep, which you also said is called PAID. I forget what the acronym stands for, but it is the political group. Mm-hmm. And I guess when I was on the website and just looking on the Instagram page, I took it to understand that, like, this is a political group, but you guys, like, follow through with action and you kind of, like, size up, like, any Black political figure just to make sure they're about what they say they're about. And really just organizing and getting the community together to do, like, action together, like political action together for things that, whether it's locally, things that they may find that they may feel strongly about. Can you talk a little bit about Our Black Slate?
Yeah. So, yeah, Our Black Slate is the theme, and the pack is called PAID, Texas Political Advocates for Independent Democracy.
Right. That's what it was.
The theme is always, let's get paid. So, you know, and that's holding people accountable. But we're going to take it a step further. It's more than the action is going to be us actually. That's where the economics come in. It's funding and running our own political candidates.
Right.
So that's what this is. So I'm not no longer here in Houston will be asking people or to do anything. You know, if you're not doing what you need to do, I'm just going to run somebody against you and replace you. So right. That's where the money comes in is. If you're not independently funded to do the things that you want to do, you can't do those things.
Right.
So, and I think that's enough people, you know, we talk about real independence and real power, but people complain about the schools every day. But I say, guess what? You're mad at the school board, but who elects the school board? You do as a people. And through that, the superintendent, and that's how those things are hired. So ultimately, you are the decision maker, but we don't think about it in that fashion because even out here in Houston, around 20% or less of people vote in these elections. And when I say really 15 or less, 15% or less.
Mm-hmm.
So you have our city council race, you have somebody win with 3,900 votes and you have 100,000 people registered. You know, mm-hmm. So it's just a lot of different things that we can, but again, that's why we say independent democracy, because a lot of people that we're going to be doing, we're going to be independent. Right. We're not rolling with the whole Democrat or Republican ticket type thing. And, you know, a lot of people don't even know the ways that you can here in Texas, if you run an independent, just to get some information, and I get 500 signatures of somebody that didn't even vote in the primary election for Democrat or Republican, then I'm automatically on the ballot. 500 okay. signatures. And people be like, man, that's 500. That's a lot of people. And I say like this, in that district, 19,000 people voted in the last election. It's over 100,000 people that's registered. So I got 80,000 people to choose from.
Wow.
So, that's and if I'm not starting a month before the election, right. I think I can be okay. And so what we're already focused on 2023. In 2024, the races that we'll be running, the candidates that we have in. And so January 2022, we're hitting the ground rolling. So you won't be seeing our black slate and paid for a whole 2 years before we even roll out a candidate for you to go vote for.
Right.
So
I think that's awesome because I think a lot of people do get caught up in that, like that Democratic and Republican thing. And it gets to a point of missing, like, what is it really about? Like they're focused so much on the title and that kind of thing. And, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're good. I was just about to say, you know why? Because they have no real community presence. So you need a backing. So who is your backing, the Republican or the Democratic Party?
Okay. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah. It's like, you know, if you don't have real community support, and most candidates don't, they just come up with something like, hey, I want to run. But they start doing stuff in the community. They hadn't been working. Most of them haven't been working in the community for years among years, really parlaying with these groups. Usually it's a far and in between relationship. And now they decided they want to run. But if you haven't been gathering that support from the community, that's not something that you can gather quick, especially in the black community. Not without a lot of money. And most candidates, some of the candidates I know ran and they raised less than $10,000.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just, like you say, it's just a point. A lot of people feel like they need to run with one of those tickets. But again, it's a false sense of support.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like it's been shown that throughout time too, like that false sense of support. And I feel like every year, every couple of years, we're always as a group, like who's going to be our representative? Who's going to be there for us? When it's kind of like we can really just be there for ourselves and kind of do what you're doing. You know what I mean? Because we want someone who's going to follow through completely, you know?
Sure.
Okay, that sounds good. And so would that be just in Texas alone, or would you expand
It didn't start in Texas. This is already something that we already have going in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if you ever heard, if you've been hearing anything about like the dads on duty. I think Will Smith posted it. You know, all these different people posted about the dads that went into the public high schools when they was having a lot of fights and they police the hallways, dads and stuff of the neighborhood and community. And they've pretty much eliminated all the fights out there that was going on. So that's already a part of our group. And again, most of our team that's out there already a president of the NAACP. So we do have those relationships as well.
That's
but
cool.
Here in the bigger cities, you know, it's a little bit more political if you're not trying to fall in line.
Right. Okay. And so you have another entity called the Black Store Inc. And I gather this is more like a retail business. And one of the businesses is a Black Beauty Supply Store. Do you want to talk a little bit about the Black Store Inc. and why you started this specifically like a beauty supply store?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the Black community, I always try to start what you call businesses of necessity, businesses that we use and patronize all the time.
Right.
That way you can kind of eliminate, that way you can kind of eliminate a lot of, you know, hardships.
Right.
Because I don't have to do so much marketing because these are businesses that people are going to use all the time.
Right.
And on the street that we have our beauty supply store on is actually 5 Asian beauty supply stores. And they each make around close to $100,000 a month,
wow,
you know, off of our community. So just thinking about different things, and through the process of meeting my partner kind of led me to the beauty supply industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we were looking for a business to fund a lot of the community efforts and things that we want to do.
Right.
So the Black stores, you know, we got a beauty supply store, full beauty supply store, full beauty supply store with all of the, you know, hair products. We have over 80 Black brands so far.
Right.
So they do mani-pedis in the back. They do hair. We got the community garden in the back. And also the paid/Our Black Slate political office will also be inside the building too.
Nice.
So it's just a big complex of what we do. And a matter of fact, one of the businesses that we have, we actually own the credit card systems that we have, and we redirect those fees back towards the community.
That's
so we
awesome.
Build websites and different stuff for so many different communities, many community groups, and you know, and we pay for it too. So we design it and we pay for it. That's where my expertise of computers and IT comes in.
Okay, I see that. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I was looking on the website and I was like, ooh, Black Beauty Supply Store. But I feel like, you know, you can't go wrong with that because somebody's always looking to get their hair done.
Look, you know, during the pandemic, they needed their lashes and they braided up.
Yeah, your nails, like everything. It's a form of self-care. It's also a form of hygiene. So it's definitely an essential and definitely something that is lucrative. I did see one of the things that stood out to me on your website when it comes to your business, like retail complex space, is that you had a section for job opportunities. And that stood out to me because usually, you know, people will have these types of space and they'll fill it with different types of businesses, but you don't really see them advertising too much about job opportunities. And I thought that was good because a lot of the people in our community can work in those locations. And it's almost like it's still in a continuous cycle that you're hiring Black people, you're paying Black people. It's like sure. still staying within the community. So that's something that stood out to me in terms of like keeping the money in circulation through like the leg of job opportunities. So that's something that like stood out to me in terms of that.
Yeah,
and no. It just, you know, it'll just make people feel good that like, you know, you're working in a Black owned business. This is a Black space. You can be yourself. You know, you won't feel on eggshells. You know what I mean?
No, for sure. It was it's funny you say that because a lot of when we first opened the store, everybody was kind of like 200 people applied in like the first day.
Oh, wow.
When we put it on Indeed. So we was having interviews. And actually, when the nail shop first opened, you know, everybody really was interviewing for that. So, I mean, of all races. And to be honest, a couple people that walked in that wasn't Black, they didn't even feel comfortable working in the store because it's so
Black. They were outnumbered.
What? Like, it was like, and then we got paintings and murals on the wall with Kaepernick and everybody fisting the album, Muhammad Ali, and
mm-hmm.
and so Queen Epitaria on the Black wall, on the back wall, and but I took that as a compliment.
Yeah, definitely.
But at the same time, you know, we have different partnerships that we got going with now with Houston Community College, ACC. So we make sure we're paying everybody at least $15 an hour.
Okay.
And it's, you know, just little things that we want to make sure that we do diligence on. The biggest thing is offering jobs. We even have little interns, 16-year-olds, and guys at that, that came to the store that's learning. And, you know, and for you know, not a valued employees. I can leave them at the store by themselves. And they can talk to ladies and stuff about shampoo and conditioner. And these
right.
are teenage boys that don't care about nothing other than girls.
Right.
So to make them want to come to work and they really love to be in the space is a win to me.
Right. And it gives them, and at such a young age too, it gives them something to look forward to, which I think is a lot of what is missing in our community. for teens, like boys and girls alike, or just even, I would say, as a whole, like for this generation, like there's a shortage on like after school programs or just, I don't know, something worthwhile. And I think when they have too much free time, they get into too many things they shouldn't be getting into. And I think it's good that they have like this that they can go to as well, but they can learn from it. They can get paid from it, and really kind of grow from it. And I think at, 15, like that's a good age to kind of start getting into like this mindset of being an entrepreneur or like operating something like this or working in an environment like this.
I let them know, like, you can either work hard now or you can have a harder life later, like what you want to do. And I'm like, you got the choice now. I wish I had a business owner or business that I can go to, go learn, get gain from, and get paid.
Right.
Like, this is like a dream come true. And but all these people, I tell them, no, they know that, I only want the best for them. And I pick him up in the morning to go get him. And sometimes, one time he used to come out, sluggish or late sometimes. And I'd be like, hey, man, I'm not here to wait on you. Like, when I tell you I'm on my side, like, you better come out here. So I left this behind maybe like five times so far. So, he show up at the store 30 minutes later, like, all right, look, I'm not here. But I dab him up and, we get on about the day, But that my dad would leave me and he was in the same house with me. If I didn't wake up at a certain time, so it's just being responsible. And I don't allow him to put that on anybody else. Like the people, his aunt and stuff he stayed with is like, oh, she told me to walk the dog. I'm like, but you knew you had to be out. You knew I was on the way. You should have walked them earlier.
Right.
I don't allow you to give those excuses. And I'm big on personal accountability.
Right. That's awesome. Those are definitely some things you want to instill early on. I was going to say the same thing. Like, I kind of wish I had, someone who was a business owner kind of, when I was a teen growing up, bring me into that environment and teach me certain things. I mean, I'm learning about it now, but it's taken some time because it's something new for me. You know what I mean? And so you have to take your time. You have to learn it. And it's hard to learn it if you're not alongside someone who's doing it. So it's always that thing of learning in a textbook versus learning with experience and actually putting it into action. Two totally different learning situations. And I'm the type, I have to be like hands-on in it, like physically doing something, and I learn it faster. But I'm trying to learn as much as I can about it now. And I feel like it's interesting because growing up, I feel like in high school, they didn't really talk about entrepreneurship too much. And it really wasn't even talked about for college. You only kind of learned about it in college is if your major was like business management or something like that. But you had to like choose it as a major. It was never, insight or anything about it was never talked about before college. And in college, it was kind of like, you don't know about it unless you know about it. And if you don't know about it, then that's just it. You don't know about it. So it's interesting now how like this time, in 2021 or how over time, like things have changed and it's become something that should be like teach your kids this now, yet at 14, at 15 and those kind of things.
Have you ever heard of Dr. Amos Wilson?
That name sounds very familiar, but go ahead and tell me.
No. I was just going to say, if you look up Dr. Amos Wilson, even like on YouTube, and that's what I emulated a lot of, even the book that I wrote called Our Black Agenda, Guide to Black Power, that goes along with the page and the Our Black Slate. He talks a lot about the condition in college and the stuff was going to be. And to be honest, he was giving speeches back in the early 90s. And he was saying, why would you send your kids to college? Because it ain't going to be no job. And he was selling that to my parents. But, it was no YouTube and stuff like that for them to go hear this message.
I just Googled him. And I know his face, but I never knew his name. But I definitely have seen a few of his speeches and things like that. So I definitely
got all his books. I got all his books. Blueprint for Black Power, Miseducation of the Black Child. Like, it goes on and on. But a lot of their philosophies, again, even people like himself, great philosophies, great everything, but until we put into implementation, right. You know, it can't be. We have to be focused on not only talking about it, but building that physical reality.
Right. It's probably a different feeling to put it into action. I'm going to look more into him because, yeah, I've seen his face. His face looks familiar, but I've never really knew his name. But I'm going to look more into him because he was right.
Real talk.
He was right.
I'm like, damn, I wish I knew this.
So I see on at the Black Store, well, the beauty supply store, you have a few events coming up, or you have reoccurring events, it seems. Something called like Black Fridays and the Black Stock Festival. What are those two events?
So the Black Friday is another group called Our Black Everything. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of events and stuff. And they do like pop-up shops on select like Fridays. So they always bring vendors, musicians, and just kind of like a whole little Friday night experience, or afternoon experience. So mm-hmm. it's been good so far. But the Black Stock Fest is our annual, that'll be our anniversary. So that'll be our 2-year anniversary for the store.
Nice.
We'll be making 2 years. And that's something where we always bring. Last year we had vendors, mm-hmm. like regular vendors and stuff where people can buy. And we had a whole bunch of musical musicians, people singing out there. I'm a big R&B fan, so I love singing. but this year we're going to have, instead of having vendors out there for people to purchase for them, all of the vendors are going to be community organizations that's out here doing stuff. Good. So I want it to be community organization themed. So when people come see, like, hey, there's no reason for you not to get into action. These are all these community groups and centers for you to get involved in. So, and we'll be registered people to vote. So, as always, we always stand. And again, we have more than enough people in our districts to vote anybody out without registering any new people. But we know that that's, you know, it's a numbers game.
Okay. And then I saw something else too that kind of struck me. What is a Black Gold Nation?
Black Gold Nation is just another group that we work with, another mm-hmm. community group.
Okay.
And they were born out of the Shrine of the Black Madonna. And, you know, they do a lot of stuff. But to be honest, yeah, Brother Tamani and the Black Gold Nation, he is how we all really kind of got connected. We were all in our own little spaces, kind of doing our own thing. And he kind of was like, hey, this person over here doing this, you over here doing this. And, you know, we kind of all, you know, been having meetings and kind of staying in contact with what we're doing.
That's awesome.
You don't necessarily have to be a part of our group, but, you know, we do have a free flow of information.
That's awesome. And so you spoke about the book that you have out, The Black Agenda, A Guide to Black Power. And so what prompted this book? So, because you have your businesses, you have your community service, and, you know, you have your in-person courses and those kind of things, and the gardening, which I think is awesome. What prompted the book?
I mean, the book is just, you know, the book is also like a workbook, so you can almost, mm-hmm. you can write in and stuff too. And we have the roles and responsibilities of every elected official in the back.
Okay.
So people will know what these people do. It goes through, you know, knowledge of seeing, going to all these community meetings and people not knowing what these representatives really are supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you asking them to do things that's really not their wheelhouse. And so you wonder why things don't get done.
Right.
That plus, you know, when we come out with things like Our Black Slate and Paid, people going to want to know who we are, what we believe, what are some of the things that we, you know, kind of believe in. And so we need something to show them. And I feel like that's where that representation of Our Black Agenda comes from.
Okay. I might have to get that. I didn't realize it was like a...
Anyone.
Oh, thank you. I didn't realize it was an actual workbook. I thought it was like a reading book.
Oh, no, it is a reading book. It got chapters and everything. But after each chapter, we do have a list of questions.
Oh, okay.
Pertaining to your neighborhood, your parish, your community, that'll help you get more involved. Like, we'll ask you, you know, who are the city council people or who handles this in your mm-hmm. community? And through answering those questions, because we broke it down, let's just say we break it down into community, you know, criminal justice, agriculture, education, economics, and through those, we broke those up in sections, and based on those sections, we asked you questions. So if you care about, let's just say you just care about education, then you can go to the education section, see the list of problems that's going on with education, answer those pertaining to your city, and that's how you can get involved and help. Because it also has lists of solutions and things for you to get involved in, showing you how to get involved in that particular section of your community. So it's not based on just Houston. If you, we just had a book club in Alabama go through it, and they all filled it out pertaining to Alabama. And now they're implementing the solutions based on the findings that they have.
So. That's awesome. I think that's one of the things too. A lot of people, they know what the issues are, but then when it comes to like the how part, the action part, they're stuck, or they don't know the first step, or sometimes all they need is like the first step or like a nudge. And then the rest, they can just, they just know how to do it, or they just don't know where to go kind of thing. But I think that's awesome that you can have it pertain to like wherever you are located. And that kind of will prompt people to like to do more research as well, I feel like. You know, when you have questions about certain things, like getting in the habit of researching certain maybe departments for your city, things like that, for whatever your questions may be.
Yeah, they just say if you enter education and you want to know who handles the levers of those things in education, not only can you go look it up pertaining to the questions, but you can go to the back of the book and look at the roles and responsibilities of every elected official, and it'll tell you who handles that section of your city. And that makes it even easier.
I'll probably have to do that because I'm in education. I'm a school administrator, and I'm always asking questions about certain things, and I have my ideas for the future with it. But that would definitely be like a good resource, and get even myself getting into a habit of doing that kind of research. You know, if you have a question or an issue, like how do you break it down and find the right thing? All right. Well, so now we're closing. I don't have any other questions. I thought we had a really good conversation. Do you have any other upcoming events? I know we touched on that.
Not any pertinent events. Don't get me wrong. We have a whole calendar for 2022 that we haven't released yet.
Right.
But we will be releasing it pretty soon. We're like I said, we're using the Black Stock Fest as our release day. Like, trust me, we have whole Our Black Slate shirts, jerseys with the QR codes on the back, ready to do community outreach. So, you know, we want to hit the ground like a well-oiled machine.
Okay, and then what's your social media?
So you already know you can find my personal at 4CantLose on Instagram. You know, the Black Store, it's the Black Store Inc., INC, on Instagram. You got the Crib Roof Economics, which is just Crib Roof Economics on Instagram. And we on Facebook as well. And of course, you got the Our Black Slate. And again, we on Facebook and Instagram, and they all have websites. You know, I'm all about being organized so people can find us. So you have no excuse. And I'm getting too. So even if you get on Google and you start Googling it, everything will come to the Black Store. So
right.
We just want to be upfront and present.
Right. All right. Well, I don't have anything else, but thank you for being on the episode.
And I appreciate you.
Everyone who tuned in, thank you for listening. Go ahead and follow his social media and check him out. And I hope you got something from this. Bye.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. Bye.